Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast, this special Monday afternoon edition of the End of the Line podcast. Today, I am joined by two of the, I know what y'all are going to say when I say this, but two of the wisest and smartest people in duck hunting, Mr. Bill Cooksey, Mr. Pat Pitt. Guys, how are y'all?
Yeah, I'm well, but I thought you knew a bunch of duck hunters.
Yeah, I kind of caught off guard about that. but I'm doing okay. I mean, heck, I got to see the turn light this morning. Didn't get much of a sunrise, so it's all gloomy, crappy over here right now.
I will say this. Y'all are about two of the five that when it's like, all right, just say you pretend like you're in this crowded auditorium before the back in high school before the principal walks out, you know, is jabbering back and forth. All you hear is that echoing sound around the auditorium. And then the principal walks out and he starts speaking and it just goes quiet. It's kind of like it is with y'all on Duck South. You know, there's about five of y'all that everybody just, when y'all speak, everybody kind of shuts up. Listen to
well, it was kind of that way when I was a kid in the auditorium, but it was generally when Ruth White walked by and everybody just stopped what they're doing to watch her.
She'd kind of ooze by.
I mean, she was one, you know, God was very, very good to her. But yeah, the principal did get some attention too.
Well, that was back when they could use the Board of Education. I try to explain to my kids what the Board of Education is. They don't
understand. Exactly right. Exactly right.
With holes drilled in it.
Yeah.
Woo! Get more speed.
I'm 42 years old and it still makes my hair stand up.
We had a shop teacher that'd make you swap licks if he caught two of you acting up. You know, try to think about how that would go. Because if you didn't hit the guy hard enough, he'd make you hit him again. And then when it was his turn, you better watch out.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Things have changed.
Yeah.
All right. I know this is way off topic. You did. And I know I caught y'all off guard last night when I sent you a text, say, hey, can I record a podcast tomorrow in less than 24-hour notice, but I'm really about to catch you off guard. My son's school, where he goes to school, his principal's a little, how do you say this on a podcast? He's a little high talker.
He's a little what?
His hands kind of floppy and high talker.
Okay, yeah, a little funny.
And I'm like, I'm sitting here thinking about when I was in school, I was deathly afraid of my principal, and here's this guy sitting at the front door every morning. Hey, Wilson, what you doing, buddy? I'm like, oh my god, how are you supposed to be afraid of that guy?
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We'll leave
way
it
off
that.
Topic. Yeah. Way, way off topic. So, I want to tell you about, this is why I made contact with y'all last night about being on the podcast. This weekend, weather got real bad at my mom's, and I had to go fix her dog kennels. And while I was down there, I said, man, you know, perfect time, the water's up, in some timber that I used to hunt growing up as a kid. This thing, all the way up until the mid-2000s, held tons of birds. One of the best spots I ever hunted growing up. Drove up to it and took my binoculars and looked across there. Nothing. And there's deep sadness in me because, you know, when I look at something like that, I see memories. I see all those great times leaning against a cypress tree. All, you don't really remember. You know, you had a lot of great hunts, and it's sad to see a place turn into that. Right. I wanted to ask y'all, why? Why? I know that y'all are thinking about this all the time. What do you think the major reasons of why?
Go ahead, Pat.
Well, there's a multitude of reasons why. I mean, you know, the pipeline has been diverted for the birds that were in that area. And I'm thinking right off the top of my head, I'd say the birds that were imprinted there aren't alive anymore. You know, that's a simple explanation, I guess, or maybe too simplified. But, you know, if birds are running their GPS from point A to point B, and all of a sudden there's a kink in the pipeline or a change in it, they got diverted. Or like the point that was made about the super hens, they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, obviously right off the bat, you have to rule out if the place itself has changed. You know, if they were there for feed and there's no longer good feed, if they were there for shelter and there's no longer good shelter, I mean, first you rule out your place. And then, as Pat said, it could be so many factors, from just up the flyway, your birds now, you know, someone has a better offering for them, so they're stopping there. Or they've been diverted totally out of the area. There may be someone hunting just, it's kind of like turkey hunting, you know, if a bird's coming and suddenly stops, you never know what really happened. Did a predator get after him and change his mind? Did he? But if someone's hunting the place right up the flyway from you, I mean, the place they stop before they get to you, is it changing their patterns? Little things can change their patterns. I know they do around my place. It's amazing how the changes over the years with more people hunting around my place has changed the way ducks act at that place and react to it.
You see that from so many people, though, that even you, Pat, I've heard you talk about it before, growing up and hunting in East Tennessee, that over there has changed.
Drastically. Well, it could be that the grass is greener. I mean, going back to the early 70s, you used to never see snow geese stop in Arkansas. Now they're here by the thousands. And so instead of going all the way to the Louisiana and Texas coast, they're stopping here. Mallards, they found out that, you know, Missouri's got rice, Missouri's got flooded corn, Missouri's got this, Missouri's got that. And I'm talking about the Mississippi Flyway. You know, why exert yourself to fly another 200, 300, 400, 500 miles when the buffet table has moved further north? And if you don't get the snow cover on it, why should they go to your little honey hole down in the Mississippi Delta?
A theory of mine, and Pat, I'd be interested to hear your take on this. I wonder if a lot of what we base what we think bird behavior should be as far as migration, I wonder if we're basing it on a bad series of years or a bad stretch of years to think of it prior to us basically draining and levying and farming the entire Mississippi River Valley. There was floodwaters, there were, you know, bottomland hardwoods, there were prairies that would flood. I mean, there was food and water everywhere for ducks before mankind screwed it up, all the way north to south.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the migrations were then. And no one really does. All we have is anecdotal, you know, from people at the time who said they always got here. Well, you had billions of them, so who knows? Then we screwed it all up, and we took all that habitat away. You know, Missouri was a desert. Iowa is still somewhat of a desert, but better than it was. I mean, all of a sudden, there's all this stuff north of us that's gone back to being decent waterfowl habitat that wasn't in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and even 80s. And we've kind of replaced to some extent what should have naturally been there, what God put there. Are we actually getting a more natural migration now?
Well, I got a little sidetracked here. I just watched 10,000 geese get up on the field behind us. all right, I'm back to reality. What? My field ecology professor once said that man's the biggest screw-up on the face of the earth. And to a point, with the farming practices changed, the land being leveled, the markers and the checkpoints that the ducks were imprinted on coming south have changed. You know, just in my neck of the woods, they've taken out plume ditches and they've taken out slough beds and whatnot. And the whole topography has changed, and it's like the ducks or the geese or whatever are waking up in a whole new world and having to get reestablished, or, you know, having to find their own way with the map being burned up. There's a lot of factors and a lot of variables. You know, man is the control, the apex predator. I mean, he's controlling a lot of it. And, you know, I'm just looking at these fields that we hunt, Bill, like a Riley farm. I mean, you won't believe how much it's changed, even since you hunted here. I mean,
really,
you know, the flume ditches are gone. The Eat It Joe's signs, so to speak, aren't there anymore. You know, the birds act different. Everything hinges on the landscape, I think. And you know, hell, for all I know, the Earth's axis could be tilted enough to where the birds aren't following the same pattern. It's like landing on Mars and trying to figure out, you know, where you need to go for a meal.
Well, I agree with that one. Big time. People ask me why I think Mississippi has changed the most, and I'm sorry to interrupt in here, but if you drive across the Mississippi Delta during the winter, it looks like this. It looks like the land surface of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
When it used to be, people were still trying to harvest beans right now, all the way till after Christmas.
And this is the latest. This is the latest I have seen crops harvested. They were actually still cutting some rice when our season opened the week before Thanksgiving, and there were beans standing in the field. I know one farmer that still had 3,000 acres of beans to cut when the season opened. I mean, this is a real late harvest year, and that changes things.
They're still cutting beans around us.
Are they really? Okay, well,
yeah.
That doesn't surprise me, and they're getting a lower yield, of course, and I'm sitting here looking at some ruts out there in this bean field now that, you know, you can hide in. It puts a lot more sheet water down and puddles, and ducks are like kids. They like to play in the mud, and I mean, they can find a puddle out in the middle of one of these fields and you know, be happy and not get nowhere near a rice field or a levee or a timber hole or whatever. I know some people that are hunting some great timber spots, and they're struggling.
Right. Absolutely. You
know, here today, calling every year is different, and you know, if you can't adapt, then you probably need to try something else. And if that doesn't work, you need to try something else.
That's why I'm sitting at home today. After what I saw yesterday, I said, I don't know how to adapt to this. I'm going to go home and get some work done.
Well, we're letting it thaw. I see a little bit of sunlight, and we're not going to thaw up enough today to make a whole lot of difference, and it's going to get down to 21 tonight. And you know, I got guys wanting to go kill ducks. I say, well, fine, go kill them. Shoot my limit, you know, shoot Bill's limit. Good luck with that. I had some guys go out yesterday afternoon after we froze up yesterday morning. They come in with a juvenile speck that, you know, obviously was on a suicide mission, and they sat out there for 4 hours. Well, we didn't see many ducks. I said, I know. He said, why? And I said, because they're sitting on the reservoirs with their heads tucked under their wings waiting this out. They're not stupid. Mm-hmm. People can laugh at shovelers all they want, but they're the biggest indicator we got for a thaw around here. As soon as that first little bit of water up against the levee starts to open up, the shovelers are the first ones to come off the reservoirs because they want to go probe and, you know, get them a nice crustacean or something to eat.
And to talk about how things change, Pat, you recall when you hunted at my place years ago, I think it was, mm-hmm. I don't know, 16, 18 degrees. And I called you up at your camp, and you drove. You said, you're going to be frozen. I said, we're going to kill ducks. Don't worry about it. And we didn't have ice eaters or anything. It's a place that field, that one corner of this field doesn't freeze as easily as most places.
Mm-hmm.
And ducks always went there. I have killed ducks there in freezes that you'd say there's no way you're killing ducks in a field. If the cat
rivers
out especially, it's going to load up.
Mm-hmm.
Right now,
it's nice to have an X.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not happening anymore. The landscape has changed enough. They don't do it there like they used to. I had thought it would happen, because they got some ice overnight, and all the sheet water, of course, as you know, froze. Normally, I'd say, we're going to burn them up. The sun's out, and the sun was out down there when I left yesterday. The sun's going to be out. We're going to murder them. I think they killed 5 this morning. And none of those were mallards. It was like a ringneck, 2 teal, and 2 shovelers.
You know, we're not even seeing the teal up here like we normally do. Biggest flock of teal.
No, they're gone.
Here. Yeah. Well,
had a good opening weekend, and that's been it.
Yeah. We had 7 in one bunch yesterday Saturday after we limited out. And I was just amazed to see that many at once. I mean, we killed 70-something ducks Saturday, and there was 1 green-winged teal out of that. But we know we even killed some greater scop. Think about that Saturday.
Really?
Yes, sir. Guy came in and said, look the size of these blackjacks. I said, well, yeah, they're greater scop. look at the wing. 2/3 white. I mean, they were. And I said, how many was in the bunch? He said, about 20. But yeah,
Brits. That makes sense.
I'm gonna throw a couple out to y'all. True or false. This is purely opinion. We don't have facts sitting here in front of us. Winters were more harsh years ago. Short term, the winters have been warmer. True or false? And then true or false on another one. And I'm going to let y'all get into it. No-till farming in the Midwest has changed a lot of the ducks' migration.
Mm-hmm.
True and true.
True and true. You're going to have a week, 10 days out of a year where you think it's, you know, the Arctic has moved down here. But by and large, you know, hell, I was killing mosquitoes. I don't know, a week ago in the pit. I'll go with true on both of them.
I mean, not to get into the whole global warming thing because of the politics of it, but changing weather isn't political, and ours has changed over recent years.
Yes.
Hopefully
and I don't
it goes
want to,
back.
I don't want to agree with Al Gore on anything.
All I'm going to do is say the weather has changed to some extent, and it has influenced the duck movements.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The axis is tilted more.
I was talking to a guy from Montana. I want y'all to comment on this. I was talking to a guy from Montana. My dad, growing up, was a Weather Channel freak. Literally, that's, you know, that was his Fox News then.
Mm-hmm.
He did constantly. And if you pay attention to the Arctic Clippers that used to come through, they used to come down through Montana and eastern Idaho. Now you see your Arctic Clippers, when they do come through, they're coming through the western parts of the Dakotas. That's where your temp gradient is. And so it kind of relates back. I was talking to a guy last year in Canada that was still holding mallards the first week of January, where it was warm on the western side of Canada. And, you know, Montana, Colorado, all through there, it really stayed above average, and it's been like that for a while.
But that takes you back, you know, why go to Florida to sit on the beach when you got a hot tub where you are, or so to speak? I mean, you know, birds are finding what they need, and the urge for them to go to the Gulf Coast or the Louisiana marshes or the Arkansas Prairie. It's not as important anymore, as long as they've got, you know, food, sex, and water. Why go anywhere else?
And our weather comes, there's no doubt, on average it's coming later. We may get some great fronts in January. It's too late. We need a front now, a real front. We need one the 15th. We need another one the 20th. Not a freeze everything solid in that front, but it's the same temperature right now in St. Louis as it is here. It's going to be the same temperature this coming Saturday in St. Louis as it is here in Memphis, or within a few degrees. That won't work. You know.
It was warmer. Open day of Arkansas duck season, it was warmer in Iceland than it was here, according to Fred. And If you're waiting on some fast moving fronts in January, it's not going to help you, because you're dealing with a reverse migration then, with birds moving up staging, you know, for spring. So,
that's, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it too. I've seen pintails, especially in Mississippi River bottoms, the end of the season when it's single digits, streaming out of the south.
Mm-hmm.
On the first day the wind switches, when it either dies before it switches to the south, or when it switches to the south and suddenly they're pouring in from the stratosphere.
Yep, that's when we get all our trophy pintails, is January, and they're not coming from the north either.
No.
But, you know, I've said you can't change women or weather, so, you know, we're going to have to learn how to deal with it.
Right.
I'm not sure there's an exact science to that.
I had someone ask me this weekend, and the guy's hunted for several years, but he's an Alabama duck hunter, so I don't necessarily always see the same things, you know, we see where there are more ducks. And he said, when do ducks come on a front? And I said, it depends. He said, well, do they come before or do they come after? It depends. Usually, my experience is after. But that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been out here and your place too, where, you know, you wake up and the world's turned to duck. What triggered that? You know, was it before the front? Was it after the front? You know, was it because the moon was this way? I mean, we're on dark of the moon right now. That doesn't have a bit of difference.
Right.
We're driving up some of our pits, when the headlights swing across the field with it pouring down rain, the field explodes with ducks. Every one of them are going back to the reservoirs. to spend the day, because you can call it what you want. Pressure has made them more and more nocturnal.
Amen.
It doesn't have to be a clear night. I mean, I've seen them feed just as hard with it pouring down rain and everything else at night. And I mean, that cooking pit, there was 5,000 ducks in it the other morning when my headlights hit it. And I mean, it just exploded. And every one of them just jumped back into that 240-acre reservoir, and they sat out the day. And that afternoon, or that evening, they started back in again. So, you know, pressure plays a lot to do with it. Just like Rocky was talking about his honey hole, they might not have been pressured there, but they've been pressured somewhere to change their habit.
And it happens quicker. Yeah, we've always seen nocturnal ducks. Even when it's pressure influenced. But it took.
It used to be one of my favorite.
It didn't take days.
Yeah.
They become nocturnal in 48 hours now, it seems.
Mm-hmm. They sure do.
Unless you have big changes going on, you know, water rising, water falling, total weather changes, you know, different things to move them. It's just gotten brutal. And it seems they, you know, used to you could sit and watch them at sundown after shooting time. I've had places before. It's like, man, y'all, once you get out of the pit, just stop at the car and watch.
Well, we used to do that. We used to do that down at Claypool's, go down there and sit and on the fish ponds and watch Claypool's empty out in the evening. You know, to see the numbers of ducks coming out of there. But when that sleet started the other night or the other afternoon, I figured we were going to see a show here, but we didn't.
Right.
So, you know, like I say, it's changed.
Y'all have both been hunting Arkansas for a long time. Talking about pressure, I'm going to ask a dumb man's question. From when y'all first started hunting over in Arkansas, 80s and 90s, or maybe even longer than that, you know, now there's a pit, every half mile? When you guys first started hunting, it wasn't that much pressure on the birds, was it?
No.
You know, opening weekend on at places like Biomeda have always been a circus. You know, the whole world need to go there. But I know Pat and I have talked about this, and he can say more about that Harrisburg area. But like down around me, around that Wynn, Fair Oaks, McCrory area, there've always been some right around Coca-Cola. But like right where my club is, there used to be weekends we didn't hear any shooting other than way over on the cache. There wasn't much hunting around us other than local guys who would, you know, they might catch some water in one of their fields and hunt it. But it wasn't we didn't see duck hunters driving up and down the roads. We didn't, you know, we were it. And now they're all the way around us. They're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I started hunting Arkansas in the early 70s, it was a 3-duck limit. You know, you get in, get out, and the ducks that have, you never see anybody hunting you half day. You know, you get in, get out, you know, the ducks had the whole world of themselves. And they do stay calm and tame and not be pressured. Before that, sometimes I think I'd love to see 30 and 3, 40 and 4, or whatever, just to weed out some of these people that took up duck hunting as something to do before football games start.
Even if it didn't weed them out, if we got down to, say, a 45 or 50 day for a liberal season, that's a lot of pressure taken off of those birds.
Well, it is. I mean, there's a lot of duck hunters I know, and there's a bunch in my club that have never known a season that wasn't a liberal season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk to them about a restricted season or a moderate season. They look at you like you're talking in Japanese or something. They have no idea what you're talking about. Pressure, you stick your hand in a mousetrap enough times and get it slapped, you're going to quit doing it. So, you go to an area and get shot at all the time and don't have a place to sit down that you're not getting shot at, you quit doing it.
And then everything, I mean, ducks aren't smart, but they do learn to survive. And every encounter with hunters just reinforces negatives. You know, and whether it's gunshots, decoys, blinds, or spinning wing decoys, it just reinforces. And then every time they see it, the potential is there to reinforce it even more, even more. And the next thing you know, they're scared as, if you've watched long enough, you've seen ducks that were scared of other ducks.
Yep.
That's pressure.
Well, you probably remember some of these big goose areas that I've hunted, and as even a couple of years ago when I was hunting in Oregon, if a flock of geese had more than 20 or 25 birds in it, they wouldn't shoot into them.
Right.
They didn't want to educate that many birds because you're not going to kill all of them. But, you know, the flocks of 8, 10, 12, yeah. But those guys were a little bit not necessarily conservation-minded, but they were pressure-minded about, you know, not trying to educate every bird on the prairie. But I don't think there's a duck that gets within 20 miles of where I'm sitting that hadn't been shot at or had the bejesus scared out of him, you know.
In the last 24 hours.
Probably, yeah, exactly.
I tell people, folks want to talk about flooded corn and all this other stuff. The way those folks with the really big, nice, high-dollar private places that kill a lot of ducks, yeah, it helps if they have good timber or good food or good whatever. But the reason they really kill them is managing their pressure.
Yep.
When you have a big block of land and you can manage all the pressure within that and have everything a duck wants, you can do real good.
Clay,
if you go in and try to hunt it every day, they're gone.
Claypools hunts 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill birds in those 3 days a week more than most people kill 7 days a week. Yeah, a lot of clubs like that. They shut off at 11 o'clock, you know, limit or not. You know, you push the safety off or not. I mean, they're doing it on a small scale. But in there, some states, I think Missouri on turkey hunting, you can't hunt past 12 or 1 o'clock.
Right.
And there's some states that waterfowl hunting stops. I know on management areas and whatnot, you know, midday or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, if Arkansas
12,
gave
1,
me
a, 3, depending on the state.
Yeah. Well, you know, if Arkansas gave me a choice of all shooting stopping statewide at 1 o'clock or no spin wing decoys, I'd have a tough decision to make. But
yep.
Of course, you know what I go with. But
yeah.
Before we jump into that, I want to ask you this, because it was an interesting point that was brought up, and I don't know if it was south or if it was in conversation with somebody. The difference in flock sizes, in what, when I first started hunting, it was nothing to land 50 to 100 birds. Now, those flock sizes are 10 to 50.
Biggest flock of mallards I've worked all year was 7, or it's been 7 so far.
Well, so, I might have worked more than that, but I sure hadn't finished them. So,
well, this was worked in and finished.
Okay.
7 ducks.
Yeah, I don't know that I've had 7 get all the way in on mallards, but back when, in those years, this is going to get into our next topic, but in those years when the spinner was outlawed in Arkansas, about 3 weeks into the season, a friend of mine named John McCauley called me from our place and said, "Cooks, you're not going to believe this, but mallards actually come in flocks of more than 2 now."
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Suddenly, that season, the longer the season went, the bigger the flocks were. And it was that way for the next year. I mean, our take was all the difference in the world as far as keeping big flocks together.
And the third
and
year,
work them and finish
back,
them.
So the third year when they changed it back, how quick did it take for them to revert?
Immediately.
Yeah, if not sooner.
Yeah. It the feeling was they got to Arkansas and relaxed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
It's well, like, I know that brings us to our latter topic, and it's probably going to be some things that we hashed out last week in the podcast between you and I, Bill, but spinning wing decoys. I don't think that people truly understand the effects that they've had on duck hunting, especially, and this one is, and I know that both of these are important to y'all, but to me, one of the biggest ones is killing all the juvies, first-year ducks in Canada and in the Dakotas and the Prairie Pothole region.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're the most susceptible. So now all of a sudden we don't have juvenile ducks. We're hunting seasoned veterans down here. It's like I sent y'all a link to that article, one of the ones that I had in my archives about super hens and that sort of thing. And it, if you'll read it with an open mind, and not go into it saying, well, I'm going to use pinwing decoys, I don't give a damn what Pat says, or I'm not going to use pinwing decoys because I already know all this. But if you were going to read it with an open mind, I think it'll open your eyes. Even open mind more every time I read it. Then I get pissed off again. It's
a hard thing to talk about for a lot of reasons. One, Pat and I both have good friends who are in that business, and we don't want to kill on them. They're good people. And folks using spinners, it doesn't make you evil or any of that. So that's not what we're saying. And one of the early arguments, first thing I said when I saw one, is these are going to be the death of us. And they weren't. Ducks have continued to survive and numbers stay all right. So we can't say they're going to, at least at this point, going to negatively impact the size of the flock, overall flock. But they change the way ducks act.
Or the quality of the hunt.
Yeah.
I don't hate people that use them. I just won't hunt with them. The negative impact, the bottom line is the resource. The negative impact on the resource is what we all should be thinking about. Not today, not yesterday, not next week. It's next year or when my grandkids are hunting or whenever. But I don't think
a lot of people... And the resource isn't necessarily numbers, just numbers.
No. But, you know, if you're going to pass something down to the next generation, I don't think this is the way to go.
Yeah, it's there's more to this resource than just the current number of ducks or even the number 10 years from now. Whether we like it or not, despite what we're seeing in a few of our areas, which are hot areas in the Mississippi Flyway, overall we're losing hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason you lose them is when the quality of the experience goes downhill. That's one reason. And for many of us, looking at the quality of the experience is not as good as it used to be. And a big part of that is spinners.
Yep. I mean, and they're frustrated. I mean, you go to just about any website and then you look at the stuff for sale. You know, people are selling this because that don't work no more. Or you get the what do you think or how many do you need or whatever post. It's aggravating as hell to a lot of people, to, you know, to try to go out and deal with it, you know, with it, without it, you know. You're not gonna please everybody, of course, but I mean, it's, we're losing hunters, no doubt in my mind. And, you know, the more hunters we lose, it's, you know, it seems like the more anti-hunters that take their place.
It gets into a thing of, okay, we're losing hunters, and we're losing them all across the board, not just waterfowl. Mm-hmm. That's the money that pays for this resource.
Yeah, yeah.
Hunters are what drives it. And if we lose too many hunters, right now the projections, this gets into my everyday job. The rate we're going, we're going to eventually end up being taxed just as people to try to fund conservation.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
And that's going to blow up because you can meet a lot of environmentalists, but you don't meet many of them after they've been asked to chip in $100.
Right. Well, that goes back to, I did a podcast with the guys out in Stanfield Outfitters, and I made the point that all these environmentalists and bird watchers and whatnot, you know, they should buy a federal duck stamp before they set foot on anything refuge or anything like that, but they don't. They don't support it. You know, it's like crashing a wedding party. You go there to eat, and then you leave. It doesn't make sense to me because we're funding all of this. And another good point that was brought to my mind this week, a place we used to hunt back home, Candy's Creek Management Area, Bill, I'm sure you've heard of it.
Oh, yeah, I've hunted there.
Well, you wouldn't believe it.
Long time ago.
Well, a friend of mine, David, a friend of his drew a blind. They draw blind spots. Now, he went in there. There is absolutely nothing planted in that area now. It's just flooded weeds is all it is. And the money that was paying for all that is drying up. So, you know, guys going, he said they didn't even see a duck. And it used to be a hell of a place to hunt. I mean,
yeah.
You put that on a larger scale, they're going to quit planting, they're going to quit doing this, they're going to quit doing that, and all of a sudden, the ducks just don't get the attention that they rightly deserve, I don't think. You know, we got to sustain them somehow or another. But
and we have a lot of state agencies that are just flat broke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, ours is in this state.
Well, I've got a friend in Alaska that's probably banded more brant, emperor geese, you name it, than anybody I know. And he said the biologists that he's working with up there don't even like the idea of people killing these birds. Well, why are they doing the research studies then? I mean, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. And I told him, I said, well, that's job security for them. He said, they don't even look at it that way. So it may be a few, it may be a lot, but if these people enjoy seeing wildlife, not only ducks, but, you know, Tweety birds and everything else, you know, they need to buy at least a federal duck stamp that the money goes to. It's not like Social Security money where they use it for everything else other than what it's supposed to be. I mean, the duck stamp money is earmarked for conservation. So, but yeah, the numbers are going down for sure.
I mean, other than getting access to private land, which is probably more difficult than it's ever been in our lives, for a multitude of reasons, we actually probably have more public waterfowl areas in my part of the country now than we've had my whole life. People have more ability to access those areas with the mud motors and ATVs and various types of boats. And yet, numbers are declining all over the country. So, I really don't care about, hear me, I'm not trying to say we need to outlaw spinners. I mean, in a perfect world, they'd have never been invented. Past that,
right. There's
a lot of room for discussion. But if with all of that ability and all of our technology to go hunt with, yet we're losing hunter numbers, don't use the excuse of we got to do anything we can to keep people. We're losing them, and we've already done everything we can. A duck doesn't have a place to hide anymore. Unless it's a refuge.
Yep. Yep. I agree 100% with you. It's not even a double-edged sword. I mean, it's a yes or no. It's black and white.
Yep.
You know, whatever cliche you want to put on it. And I'm sad, really, that I know that Mary Claire and Reed and Olivia and whoever else has grandkids and whatnot are never, never going to see or be able to enjoy the way it was really meant to be.
Right.
Now it's like a demolition derby. I mean, you know, somebody's going to be left standing, but it's a circus, like you say. I mean, we got the catalog cowboys that, you know, buy everything that comes out. And it's the American way, you know, to invent the hula hoop. Everybody had to have a hula hoop or a yo-yo or whatever. And, you know, more power to them. The guys with the pet rock, greatest idea ever. They made money off a rock they picked up off the street. but, you know, and it's made people rich. But, you know, a duck or waterfowl is a pawn for the almighty dollar. You look at, you know, you start adding up what outfitters make and restaurants and motels, and I mean, it's just astronomical. We got to take care of the resource, or all that astronomical stuff isn't going to be there no more.
And you have, this is a perception I have, and I'd be interested, maybe some young folks will jump in on when they listen to this and comment. But Mike Fleeman and I talked about it in Blind yesterday. Over the last several years, it's amazing the number of new hunters you run into, especially on public ground, that have no mentors. They didn't get into this by hunting with their father or by hunting with a friend or being invited by a coworker. They just started duck hunting. And that's great. Come do it. That's wonderful. But they don't begin by learning from other people. What are just our unwritten rules are?
Well,
are one thing. The unwritten rules are myriad, and they can be local, and they're usually there for good reasons, yet they don't know them, and it wrecks things for everybody.
Gentlemen, well,
it's kind of like a gang mentality, okay? It's like laying down a drag bunt when a pitcher's in the ninth inning with a no-hitter. You just don't do it. you know, it's something that needs to be handed down from the Dr. Andrews's and the Nash Buckinghams and the Jimmy Robinsons, and the list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. People don't have that anymore. You know, my dad, bless his heart, played golf. He didn't hunt, didn't care anything about it. But my scoutmaster did. And he took us under his wing as a group of us, you know, big kids. And, you know, we started out on rabbit hunts in Middle Tennessee and dove hunts and stuff like that. And you know, we were taught the right way. Then you're going to get the argument, well, what is the right way, my way or the highway? But no, I mean, what I'm talking about is ethical and respect. I guess respect the resource. That's why I get so pissed off at people that wring a duck's neck. You're not respecting the resource. I mean, if you got to use one of those damn eradicators, do it, but just don't let me see it. But you got to respect the resource. It's just like anything else.
Respect the resource and respect other hunters. And that's where you so much get into private property, but even on public ground, you know, we're talking public ground mostly with that, but even on private ground, you know, moving too close to someone else's blind or pit, you know, just because there's a property line that you can get next to, or there are a lot of little things you can do as neighbors that'll help each other, or you can wreck it for each other.
Well, you
and
don't
it's even worse in public ground.
You don't set your deer stand up on the fence line.
Right. I mean, if
like
you
that.
Wouldn't want it done to you, just
right.
because it's public, don't say it's public, I can do what I want. If you wouldn't want it done to you, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't.
Well,
I don't care if someone's done it to you. If they did it and you didn't like it, don't do it to the next guy.
Right, right. It's just like when you buy a broken toy from a kid, you try to sell it to somebody else, let them deal with it. It's simple respect, and that's a good point, you know. And I tell the guys here at the club, I had some guys the other day. I said, you're sitting out there with 22 ducks trying to kill two more ducks and it's noon. I said, if you're not satisfied with that, you need to be somewhere else.
Right.
Get out of there and let those ducks, you know, have the field. But we weren't thinking. I said, well, there's a lot of people that don't think. I don't sometimes myself. I've been accused of that. I'm sure Patrick, Stephen, when they listen to this, they'll come up with 100 different things that I've done. But you know, at least I'm consistent. So.
And look, we all mess up. I've set up too close to people. You know, usually it was an accident, but you know, I've messed up too. So it happens, and that's where I try to keep. When I see somebody screwing up, I try not to judge them on it, because everyone does it. But think about it. Just think about it. Try to minimize it. And if people would do that, you wouldn't have the trouble in Arkansas on the WMAs. You know, all this crap that people gripe about on social media would go away.
Go away. Well, my dad used to say, just because somebody else does it, that doesn't mean you have to. If they jump off a cliff, are you going to? Well,
right.
You know, he had a good point. But I don't know if it's ever going to turn around, Bill. I mean, hell, I'm 71 years old. I'm probably not going to have to deal with it that much longer anyway. But you know, I don't know what the boys will probably put on my tombstone. You know, here's Pat. He died pissed off at duck hunters.
Nobody hates a duck hunter like another duck hunter.
That's right. That's right. But I don't know. You guys, I wish I could take some of these young people. And we donated hunts. We got a youth hunt this year that we donated to the NEA, you know, charity up here. They raised over $600,000 for the Northeast Arkansas charity this year, and you know, this youth hunt we donated for $1,000, they got $1,000 out of it. I mean, I'm gonna have a couple of kids out here that may or may not have done much duck hunting or seen some of this stuff, and you know, first thing they're gonna do is leave their cell phones in the truck, and they're gonna come out, and if they go away with one thing, you know, that they've learned or seen or that they hadn't seen, I'll call it a success.
Right.
But I don't know. I know Rocky brought up a point the other day on a post about, you know, bashing people over this. I mean, they had a Sideshow Carnival posted up with you know, more toys than Santa's elves had. But sometimes people, you come down a little hard on some of these new guys, but you know, there again, you know, my grandmama said, you know, you got one mouth and two eyes and two ears. You need to look and listen more when you talk. I don't know.
I wish these new folks and the folks who tend to get offended so quickly on social media could spend 3 or 4 days at your camp or my camp or any number of camps so that they can remember what it was like in a high school locker room. That's how duck hunters treat each other.
Mm-hmm.
So as often as not, when you think someone's being snarky and mean, they're really mostly messing with you while trying to make a little bit of a point.
Mm-hmm. That is a great point. Awesome.
Exactly. I mean, I have people call up and, you know, basically try to invite themselves over, but I'm a little leery of strangers. I got my ears rung real good one day this year already, so.
I'm sorry about that.
I know, but you're shorter. It's all in good fun, and I mean, if you got thin skin, take up some other sport.
Yeah,
I don't think that this could have gone any better. I think that is a awesome point to end on. I'm sorry that I took more of your day than was originally planned, but it was it's great to sit here and listen to two veterans like this. It's just If this doesn't get your heart pumping listening to two guys that have been doing it as long as Pat and Bill, whew, a lot of knowledge and wisdom in this podcast. Guys, thank you again. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be here.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed both of you.
Yeah. We still got to get together, buddy.
Let's do it.
All right.
And we
get this weather out of here.
We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.